and welcome to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power. We're coming to you after a storter of a night for Scottish clubs in Europe. You may not like Rangers and Celtic, but don't be hating on the coefficient. The local rivalry in Edinburgh knows no bounds. Hearts binned off their manager, so Hibs followed suit 4 days later. Who will receive a rose from Jack Ross? It's not all doom and gloom in the capital. Edinburgh City are on a promotion push in League Two, and we'll check in on them later. I'm Andrew Slavin, and with me in the studio from Copa 90, Mr. Finn Marks.
Hello.
And alongside us, a European football journalist who watched Chelsea 4, Ajax 4 on Tuesday night. It's Kieran Canning. Kieran, the only thing that game was missing was Billy Gilmore.
Would have been 8-4 Chelsea in that case. It genuinely was one of the craziest games I think I've ever seen. Normally, when you get games of that score, you can pinpoint to actually neither side being that great sometimes because of, you know, it's just the open defences are a bit shaky and stuff like that. But no, it was just great fun.
Yeah, that was chaotic. There's an election coming up. Are we excited about this?
Yeah, really excited.
Oh, really?
No.
I'm not. Right, I thought you were being serious.
No.
We don't want to be like former Celtic striker Tony Watt and current Charlton striker Lyle Taylor, because they had a wee falling out. Does anyone want to lead with this?
Yeah, I was actually quite impressed by footballers getting involved in political issues. As someone who had to cover, if it was in France, when the Brexit vote happened, and then being sent to the England camp the next day for Harry Kane's It Is What It Is. I was quite impressed by two footballers getting into quite serious political issues.
So Tony Watt tweeted, "I don't know the first thing about politics, but I don't mind paying tax at all. If the government want to tax me an extra 5% and it would save a lot of lives and help a lot of families, I'm all for it." So Lyle Taylor tweeted, "Don't care what anyone thinks of me, I won't be voting for someone to take more money I work for away from me." Tony Watt is at CSKA Sofia right now, which I always struggle to say. And Taylor wanted to point out that he's obviously not paying tax in the UK right now. So Watt replied, "Who's paid more UK tax in their life, me or you?" Taylor then said, "Sorry, Tony, you money man, you. I bow to your superior earnings." The argument ended with Watt calling Taylor muggy.
I do like this though, because I just think it should be something that they ask footballers on a more regular basis. I think, you know, what
rather than what their favourite dish is.
Well, I think even in the post-match interview, rather than the generic, just talk us through that goal or how big a moment was that for you. Just be like, who are you voting for? Yeah. Like, just kick it off. It'd be great.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Edward, can it get even better for Celtic? Here's Olivier in charge.
You said it, Sutton. One of the great nights in Celtic's European history. They'd never won in 12 previous visits to Italy, but it was lucky number 13 as Olivier Ncham scored a 95th minute winner in the Stadio Olimpico. For the second time in a fortnight, Celtic came from a goal down to beat Lazio 2-1, and it means Celtic have qualified from Group E with two games to spare. What a night.
Easy. No danger.
I don't think we were saying that in the first 20 minutes when Lazio started very brightly, ahead through Ciro Immobile. But yeah, incredible from Celtic. I mean, they did ride the luck a little bit at times, a few good saves from Fraser Foster, but you're going to have to do that when you're going away to a team that's fourth in Serie A. It did play their strongest lineup tonight, which they rested a few players in Glasgow 2 weeks ago. And two incredible finishes, firstly from Forrest to bring them level just before half-time, and then Ncham, who hasn't had a great time at Celtic over the past 18 months or so, after a very good first season, came on with about 15 minutes to go, and even then we were kind of looking at him, and when you saw the effort that all the other Celtic players were putting in, we were questioning him a little bit in terms of he wasn't maybe pressing or chasing back as much as some of the others. But then to deliver just that one incredible moment of quality in the 95th minute, yeah, it's incredible.
It is incredible, considering, you know, there was a lot of really hairy moments. I'm thinking about when Scott Brown passed the ball straight to a Lazio player and the pressure was on. But Fraser Foster, once again, a string of massive saves. And this is just huge for Celtic now, because they can look forward to, you know, more big nights, can't they, Finn?
Yeah, definitely. And it's just uncharted territory, isn't it, for a Scottish team in European group stage competition to have qualified with two games to go. It means they can actually potentially do a bit of squad rotation for the two remaining games. They don't have to win them. Obviously, it's still between them and Cluj probably for top spot. So they'll want to be professional and try and finish in the top spot if they can. But it's amazing. Four games in and they've qualified. When you look at the group as well, before the group stage started, no, I don't think anybody would have had Celtic down for 6 points against Lazio. Like that, it's a stunning set of results.
Even just the group as a whole, when you think of the fallout to the Cluj Champions League ties, and then when you saw this group, and I know they've fallen off the pace a bit since, but when the group started, Rennes were top of Liga. Everyone was kind of looking at it as Rennes and Lazio as the two teams from the top five European leagues. Rennes, who got to the quarterfinals of the Europa League last season and beat Arsenal 3-1 in the home leg of that quarterfinal. I know Lazio have a very outside chance of still pipping Cluj, but for those two teams to practically be out of it after four games, and I think it goes to show that they rode the luck a little bit tonight, but Celtic's performances generally in Europe away from home under Lennon this season, they've won in Sarajevo, they won in Stockholm in the European qualifiers, beat Nomi Kalju, who weren't up to much, also in the qualifiers, drew in Rennes, and have now won away in Rome. It does show a real progression from the way they've performed in Europe, even over the last couple of years with Brendan Rodgers in charge.
Yeah, they obviously drew in Cluj. You make a good point, though. Under Brendan Rodgers, it was never convincing in Europe. Are Celtic playing better football in Europe under Neil Lennon?
I think so. I think,
or more winning football.
Yeah, I mean, the comparison, I think, is a bit fairer last season and this season, because the first 2 years of Rodgers, obviously you got into the Champions League where it's a much higher level and there were some real thrashings there in the 7-0, the 7-1 against PSG, 7-0 against Barcelona. Lennon isn't going up against that standard of opposition as good as Lazio are, as we're saying, a team that's fourth in Serie A. But yeah, even like last season away from home, they were quite easily beaten by Leipzig, quite easily beaten away by Salzburg, and lost home and away against Valencia. So I think generally you can see that Lennon's team are very a bit harder to beat. They set up a bit more conservatively, but still possess that real counter-attacking threat. And as we saw in the last 10-15 minutes of this game, that it wasn't the case that Celtic were sitting in and just defending the draw. And we were saying in the studio, maybe even they ought to have been doing that a bit more so, because they were leaving themselves a bit open, but they'd always maintained that counter-attacking threat. Missed a good chance through Odson Edward, but then he pounced on a really sloppy pass by Lazio midfielder Berisha, and played in Ncham for the winner.
The finish from Ncham, even though it was a horrendous mistake, because I don't think Edward wasn't really even pressing.
There was no pressure. There was no pressure on Vala and Berisha.
But in that instance, you've still got to put the chance away, and Chan did that emphatically. A fantastic finish.
Well, next up for Celtic, they host Motherwell on Sunday. Their opponents, Motherwell, have only lost once on their travels this season. That was in Glasgow at Ibrox. They were beaten 5-2 by Celtic at Fir Park earlier in the season. But it was a good performance from Stephen Robinson's side, particularly against Rangers. They looked quite well and they took the lead in that game, didn't they?
They did. And also, I think they took the lead against Celtic as well. Yeah, and what I remember from that game, the game at Fir Park, was just that Motherwell didn't give Celtic a second's rest. And then it was more just kind of the fitness levels, really. It was when they started to tire in the second half and Celtic were able to pick them apart. You know, we've made the point numerous times this season of how enjoyable it is to watch Motherwell, their kind of style of play, and they're completely different from the way that they were playing a couple of years ago. It's just, it's really good to see. It will be interesting to see how they set up going to Celtic Park, given that I think at Fir Park they were just like, oh, this is our patch, you know, we're going to give as good as we can. I don't think you can do that at Parkhead. It's just, it's a much bigger pitch. You do need to set up with a much more defensive mindset, I think, and it'll be interesting to see how Motherwell do with that, because I don't know how good they are doing that.
How do you think the players specifically here can cope with the, you know, the interest in their manager, Stephen Robinson, because he's highly tipped to be going to either Hibs or Hearts? That must be unsettling to the players, right?
Yeah, yes and no. I don't think until it's something that's really likely to happen. I think at the moment it's very much speculation about Robinson. I think, yeah, if and when it did happen, it would be a massive loss for Motherwell if he was to move on, given what he's done there, particularly related to the budget that he has and his ability, whether it's him or the team he's got around him, to constantly sort of find gems, particularly down in England, for very little money. I think for this game, the big thing is going to be, how does tonight affect Celtic? Do they go in on a massive high and take that on, or do they suffer a bit of a hangover, given, you know, it was very
classic European hangover?
It was a very much an end-to-end kind of game as well, so it was very physically demanding. Lennon hasn't rotated a huge amount, particularly over the past few weeks, so I struggle to think that he's going to make too many changes, so that could be the only thing that goes against Celtic, that, you know, aren't they sort of a bit physically and mentally shattered after what's happened tonight? And Motherwell are one of the teams in the league that are capable of going there and springing a surprise if Celtic aren't 100% at it.
Could it work in Motherwell's favour that Robinson's tipped? The players actually say, well, we'll turn out a performance to try and keep you to stay here.
The bigger thing is going to be whether Hearts or Hibs really go for him, because I think if they do, and if they're willing to match what Motherwell would want in terms of compensation, then I'd struggle to see him staying no matter what happens. And if you're a Motherwell fan, it's one of those situations where you would love to go and win at Celtic Park, but if you do, then it really does put him in the shop window, and maybe that would, you know, the lesser evil in the long run is to take a 2-1, you know, an unspectacular 2-1 defeat and keep hold of your manager.
I think that's a good point. If Motherwell turn over Celtic, Robinson's probably gone.
But would he want to go? That's the thing as well. Like, it's taken him a little bit of time to set up the team the way that he wants them to be playing. They're playing really well. If you're going into a team like Hearts, you might have to deal with the whole Levine legacy thing. If you're going into Hibs, you're probably looking at some January signings to try and change the team around. So it could be that as well.
Just with another sort of Scottish angle into it as well, it's a bit like the Alec Neil situation at Preston, where Stoke clearly wanted him to take charge, and he stayed at Preston because, you know, why would you go from being at one end of the table directly? And the Preston Stoke example is even more extreme, because Preston went top of the table on Sunday and Stoke are right at the bottom. But why would Robinson necessarily go from a team that's challenging for third at the moment to a team that's at the other end of the table?
And bear in mind, like, great news for Motherwell in the week when they cleared their debts with their previous owners. A club that's really being run well, fan-owned, and, you know, Robinson's building something. Maybe it isn't a good idea to leave. That was a close shave for Celtic. Speaking of which, I want to talk to you about Harry's. Their razors have top quality blades and are almost half the price of the leading five blade brand. I like to shave, and I am shaving more because I am an up and coming father. I don't want to be cuddling my new baby and giving it face rash. So I need to shave. I need to keep getting used to my smooth face. So there's no facial. I'm looking at my co-hosts around me, and I'm seeing not a lot of hair on Kieran's face, just your eyebrows. You should give it a go, guys. So get started today with your trial set for £3.95. Support the podcast and get your trial set delivered to you, including a razor handle, five blade cartridge, foaming shave gel and travel blade cover by going to harrys.com/Scottish right now. That's harrys.com/Scottish. Both Edinburgh clubs in the Premiership are currently without a manager after Hibs dismissed Paul Heckingbottom on Monday. We're joined now by Anthony Brown from the Edinburgh Evening News. Anthony, Heckingbottom was unbeaten in his first 10 games in charge, but a run of 10 games without a win in the Premiership cost him his job. Any sense of surprise?
Not really, no. I think this has been on the cards for probably a couple of months now in terms of the way his reign seemed to be going. Obviously, as you say, it started really well. Everybody was singing his name. Hecky was at the wheel and all that in the first 10 games when he was unbeaten. He won 6 of his first 8. Everything seemed to be going really well, and then after that, it just seemed to hit the skids. The summer was really poor in terms of recruitment. There was a lot of questionable signings. People were thinking, a lot of players were downgrades on the guys who had gone out. they weren't convinced that they'd brought in players who were ready to go and compete for the European places, and that's the way it's transpired so far. They've looked pretty grim. It got to the point where the fans were turning. There was no sign of any real momentum beginning to build, and it was just becoming a bit toxic towards the end. And no, it was no great surprise when the news was eventually announced on Monday.
Ron Gordon, the Hibs owner, was in attendance at Hampden for their defeat to Celtic. Do you think the decision was already made?
I think they would certainly have been psyched for the possibility that they were going to have to make a decision at some point. I wouldn't like to say it was already made before Saturday, but certainly they would have been of a mind going into that game that if he lost and lost heavily, which he did, then they would have to do something, particularly in light of going 10 games in a row without a win in the league.
Is it surprising in a way that they didn't make the change sooner? Were they just waiting on the semi-final?
I can see why they gave him a bit of time. I think I'm one that advocates giving a manager time. And in fairness to him, he was starting to pick up points here and there. He wasn't winning games, but he was, as I said, he was getting into good positions at Aberdeen away, Celtic at home, Hearts at home, Ross County, he was 2-0 up. He was getting into positions that made you think, if they can just eke out a win here, something might turn for them. But there's only so far you can go just picking up a point at home to Ross County and Livingston and things like that. And it got to the point where I think they've just thought, hang on a minute, we're 1 point off the bottom in November. We need to act.
In terms of where it went wrong, does it just come down to the recruitment, like you said earlier?
I think that was the main thing that did for him in the end. I mean, certainly there was other aspects. He could have probably deployed the players that he had at his disposal in a better way, arguably played two up front. I mean, I know there's more than one way to skin a cat, but certainly the strikers, Camberi and Doidge, both looked like they were struggling as the lone striker. Florian Camberi actually told me last week after the Celtic game that he would prefer to play as a partnership with Christian Doidge. He felt that would benefit them both. So little things like that, he could probably have done better. Maybe I think it was apparent for some time that the formation he was playing with wasn't really going to get results even with this squad. But fundamentally, I think the recruitment was the issue. He didn't have enough quality in the squad.
What do you make of the names and the frame for the job? The bookie's favourite is Jack Ross, but he obviously has links to Hearts.
I'd be astonished if Jack Ross ended up at Hearts, to be honest, but certainly Jack Ross is the early front-runner in terms of the bookmakers. I can see exactly why that is, because he's out of work. His stock level's high in Scotland by virtue of what he did with Alloa and St Mirren. He didn't do quite so well at Sunderland, but obviously that's a hard club to go in and manage, and he wasn't exactly an outright failure by any stretch, so I can absolutely see why he is the front-runner. However, Leanne Dempster was keen to stress today that there is no front runner, so to speak, and she's absolutely adamant that they are open-minded. The fact she's saying that it may take until the end of the month to get an appointment does back that up, because if they did have their eye on Jack Ross, they could just go and get him right now and in theory have him in place for this weekend if they really wanted to. So it does make me think they are open-minded. They are going to do a proper process interview, maybe whittle down a shortlist and then interview 4 or 5 guys and see who they end up with, the same way they did when they appointed Paul Eckenbottom 9 months ago.
Obviously, Jack Ross is the standout favourite because he's Scottish and he's available, and he did so well with St Mirren, winning the championship 12 points ahead of all the rest. You know, so went to Sunderland, did an okay job at Sunderland, but it was just so many draws. Who else is in the frame? Who else do we think? Because I don't know why they don't just try and tap up someone like Gordon Strachan.
I think he's only recently just taken over the role at Dundee, hasn't he?
And
I think he's quite happy there.
Does he want to come back into sort of frontline management there? I wouldn't go for someone like Strachan, but I'm more surprised that some of the other managers in the league who have done a very good job, like Stephen Robinson, maybe haven't been mentioned. I think Jack Ross is a strange one because he's a very good reputation in Scottish football. The sheer fact that people just sort of assume that Hearts or Hibs will go for him. But he's never actually managed in the Scottish Premiership. Mm. I mean, he did, as you say, take St Mirren up from the Championship. His time at Sunderland, heard David Moyes on the radio the other night, and he obviously has experience of this and saying how Sunderland can be a bit of a graveyard for managers, and maybe that's the case with Jack Ross as well. But I actually felt that he'd gone to Sunderland at exactly the right time, that going down to League One, he almost felt as if they'd gone as low as they could go.
Sure,
and then he had by far the biggest budget in that league to work with and still didn't get them up. And then had a poor start to this season, which eventually cost him his job. So I would be very interested to see him take one of these two jobs to actually get a better idea of how good a coach he is. For me, he still has to prove he's as good as his reputation seems to be at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, what did we make of Hibs' approach in Heckingbottom's last game in charge? It was a 5-2 defeat to Celtic in the Betfred Cup semi-final. It was, you could tell early doors, Celtic were just on it.
The kind of goals that Celtic scored all felt like, you know when you're playing FIFA and you're playing as a lower ranked team, or Pro Evo, whatever your preference is, other games are available, but you're a lower ranked team and you know how to play the game, but your players just physically can't cope with it, and the computer always ends up scoring like 2-yard tap-ins or rebounds, yeah, and just breaking you down. That's kind of what it felt like. It's like no matter what Hibs did, like Celtic would still get a chance from 3 yards out, and they took all of them. So I don't know, it wasn't much different from what we've seen, I think, from Hibs most of the season.
Mm-hmm. I think the big difference between this game and the game they played in the league a couple of weeks ago was that Celtic weren't really on it that day. Whereas
this was when it finished 1-1.
Yeah. Whereas these type of games, when there's one team who's clearly the superior team, if that team plays at their best or close to their best, then almost no matter what the opposition do, they aren't going to stop them. I heard some criticism of Hibs' approach in terms of were they too open, but I think that's really been Hibs' problem throughout the course of the whole season. They don't have the players to play a kind of defensive type game, soak up pressure and try and take their chances on the break. The players that Heckingbottom brought in are all kind of technically good players that want to play in the front foot. He said at the start when he took over how he wanted them to be more possession-based team and change the style quite a bit from Lennon's team. So they didn't really have the players to play that way against Celtic. And actually, although the game was probably already gone, their best spell in the game was when they were trailing 4-2 and they had quite a few chances to bring it back to 4-3, and then you never know, 10 minutes before the end. But that was at that point in the game was wildly open, and yeah, that was when you actually seen the best of some of Hibs' players. So it'll be interesting to see whoever does come in, whether they try to change the style again or they have to wait until January and get in some of their own players. But yeah, they should definitely be higher in the table than they are for the players that they've got.
Well, they've got St Johnstone this weekend, and Heckingbottom actually described this game on Saturday as a cup final, but he won't be leading them out now, so
ready and everything.
Yeah, exactly. But the tables have turned a little bit for St Johnstone, haven't they? You know, 2 wins in a row and they got their first clean sheet of the season against Hearts.
Yeah, I think it probably feel like they've turned a corner. It's kind of weirdly what you would have expected Hibs and probably Hearts to have done by now.
Yeah.
Is to start. This is the St Johnstone that you kind of know. Like they're a very capable, probably, mid-table team, and the last couple of results are kind of more indicative of what you would think they would be performing like. I think sometimes that's all it takes. It's a confidence thing as well. I think in games before the last two matches, you could easily see, when they went a goal down in a game, despite having a lot of possession or a lot of chances, the heads would just drop. But I think that's kind of changed now, and they look like they've got a bit more fight about them.
We looked at these three games, this block of three games beforehand, which was the home game against Hamilton, home game against Hearts and home game against Hibs, as a big opportunity for them to completely turn their season around. And obviously getting those first two wins under the belt, confidence is up. It's a weird one, this, because obviously Hibs sacking the manager, but they're not going to have a new manager bounce type thing, because they're not going to have an appointment made by the time the game comes around. So it's a great chance for St Johnstone to put more sort of breathing space between themselves and the bottom of the table, and really put Hibs in further into that relegation mire.
Well, the last time these teams faced each other at Easter Road in August saw St Johnstone score a 94th minute equaliser, which is a common theme for Hibs this season, conceding leads.
I just tend to find, especially in the midfield, the work rate of some of the players there defensively just doesn't seem to be there, and it leaves them so open and they find it so difficult to see games out. I think Scott Allen, there's absolutely no doubt about his ability. I think defensively he just doesn't work as hard as a lot of the other players. I think even Malin as well doesn't quite give them that cover, and I think that is something that they'll need to sort out pretty quickly. And I think that would actually see them probably take a lot more points than they would have done if they'd had somebody in there that's able to like be that link between defence and midfield a little bit more.
Jose Mourinho here. Let me tell you a thing or two about Special. An 18-year career at the top of football management, that's special. League titles in every country I've worked, that's special. What isn't special is winning the daily jackpot on Paddy Power Games.
That's right, Jose. Yes, someone wins an average £40,000 jackpot every single day. So if you win, don't think you're special.
No respect.
Get over it. Daily jackpots by Paddy Power Games.
Jackpots must be awarded by 11 p.m. and vary from day to day. Jackpot is shared with other operators. Available on selected games. T's and C's at paddypower.com. 18+.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Scottish Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
This is Jack. This is Morales. This is Morales. Oh, he's only good and done it again. Alfredo Morales made that 11 European goals this season.
Not to be outdone by Celtic earlier in the night, Rangers roared past Porto at Ibrox thanks to two late goals from Alfredo Morelos and Stephen Davis. It's still all to play for in Group G in the Europa League. 3 points separate the entire group. Rangers and Young Boys are on 7 points. Feyenoord and Porto are on 4. It was looking a bit dicey for Rangers with 20 minutes to go. Porto were probably having their best spell of the game, and then two moments of absolute quality, real quality. The pass from Jack, the finish from Morelos. Finn, amazing finish. Amazing night for Scottish football.
It really is. And it needed a kind of moment of brilliance like Morelos showed to break the deadlock. I thought Rangers were kind of tepid for a lot of the game, having seen how they played 2 weeks ago in Porto, where they were unlucky not to win that game. Like, they played Porto off the park in terms of their passing and everything else. They were just not sluggish, but there was just something that was a bit low-key evening.
They played better football in Porto and only got a draw, and yet they didn't play as well tonight and got
they
the
did,
win.
And I don't know if part of that was to do with the fact that they really came out their shells when Porto scored 2 weeks ago. It all felt a bit humdrum for about 70-odd minutes. Ryan Kent showed little moments of endeavour, but it was Morelos that was kind of dragging Rangers kicking and screaming to the 3 points. And I think there was one point, probably about an hour into the game, where he was closing down on the goalkeeper when the goalkeeper was in possession and literally beckoning back to the midfielders to be like, come and support me. He's like, come on, we need to be closing them down. So he was phenomenal tonight. There were a couple of defensive clearances he had as well. That goal, the way that he took it and opened up his body from the pass into him from Jack, which probably gave him, you know, the extra couple of centimetres that did on the curl just to take it past the goalkeeper and inside the far post was phenomenal.
11 goals in Europe for Morelos this season. Honestly, that finish, it was stunning, wasn't it?
The thing that's even better about it is an incredible finish. It's on his weaker foot.
Yes.
It's like to have both the skill and the confidence to be able to do that. And I think Morelos is becoming even more this season. I mean, he scored a lot of goals last season, but he was still last season at times one of those strikers that maybe needed two chances to score a goal, whereas this season he's just deadly. Like, that was his only real clear sight of goal all night, as I say, on his weaker foot, and it's just an absolutely perfect finish. And it was always I know they went on and got the second goal, it was a deflected shot from Davis, but it always felt like that kind of game where one goal might set, whoever got the first goal was going to be in pole position, because there weren't clear cut chances at either end. And I think it's a pattern of Rangers home games in Europe under Gerrard that so good defensively, they don't give goals away. I don't think they've been behind in a European game at home under Gerrard, that they're always in the game, and even if they're not at their absolute best, there was a chance of winning the game with one moment of quality, and they got that through Morelos tonight.
So what has this done for the coefficient then, Kieran?
Yeah, so at the
our
moment,
good friend.
Exactly, at the moment, Scotland is the fifth best league in Europe.
Get in there!
Come on. behind only England, Spain, Germany and the Netherlands.
So who are we ahead of?
We're ahead of Italy, we're ahead of Portugal, we're ahead of France. And so I think...
Get it, Rooney!
It's only a matter of time before we see the Celtic Rangers Europa League final.
It's the final everybody wants in Gdansk.
Yeah, well, yeah, could be many Celtic Rangers finals this season. But next up for Rangers, it's a trip to Dick Advocaat's Feyenoord in 3 weeks. The good old pal, Dick.
The amazing thing about Rangers' campaign is that they're probably disappointed to be in the situation where they are, because they played so well in Porto, could easily won that game. I think should have won the game in Switzerland conceded very late against Young Boys. They're in a position where they should already be through and still have an excellent chance of going through. I think I agree that the next game away to Feyenoord could be a tricky one, but the last game being at home against Young Boys, I think if they win that, they'll go through no matter what. So I'd fancy them to get the job done.
It's been a good week for the club. you know, it's going to be Celtic versus Rangers in the Betfred Cup final. I think a lot of the media have been waiting for it since Steven Gerrard was appointed. It's a Glasgow derby in a cup final.
It's such a huge, huge game, and it has such a bearing potentially on the rest of the season as well, because if Rangers win that game, it really lays down a marker for the rest of the season, gets that trophy under the belt. And not just in Scotland, but we've seen, like, for example, Mourinho in England talking about how important the League Cup is as the first trophy of the season to get that extra bit of confidence, and particularly when it's your first trophy together as a team, as it would be for Gerrard Rangers. So, yeah, it's a huge game.
I think I remember hearing an interview with Gary McAllister a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about when he was a player in that Liverpool team that won the three trophies in 2001, I think it was, around about then.
Yep.
But he was saying how important the League Cup was for them to develop that winning mentality as a squad, and that's actually what spurned them on to the further silverware that season. And I think it could be, like you're saying, Kieran, it could potentially be a seismic shift in terms of mentality if Rangers win that. We'll probably talk about it more close to the time, but it's a really intriguing one.
Well, first things first, they move on now to go to Livingston. They're at Almondvale, and obviously Livingston beat Celtic at home this season. They beat Rangers there last season as well. You know, it could be a tricky tie if we have this, you know, the typical European hangover. It's a high for Rangers, it's a high for Celtic as well. It could be upsets this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I think Rangers probably have the more difficult game just because they're playing away from home, and Livingston, as you say, have shown their capabilities to shock both Celtic and Rangers over the past couple of seasons. They actually played away at Livingston earlier this season in the League Cup as well, won 1-0, but it was a tight game. It wasn't one where Rangers ran away with it. Livingston will make it difficult for them. Lyndon Dykes has missed the last three games, as you say, and could be missing again, and he's a big miss for Livingston. Livingston actually also caused Rangers problems at Ibrox earlier in the season. They went ahead.
That's when Lyndon Dykes got sent off.
Yeah. Rangers won 3-1, but I think they scored all three goals in the last 20 minutes. So Livingston will certainly give them a game. It'll be physical. I think Rangers just on the high of tonight, going into an international break, it'll be such a big thing for them just to make sure that they at least don't lose any ground on Celtic.
Back we go to Edinburgh, and on Saturday at 3 o'clock, it's Hearts versus St Mirren, the team with the worst home record against the team with the worst away record. So something will give in this one, folks.
Yeah? Nil-nil draw.
Nil-nil. It's standout, isn't it? Absolute standout. Alston McVee was in charge for the Betfred Cup semi-final against Rangers. He didn't start Ikpeazu, which was a surprise, and they lost 3-0. He kind of explained himself in the post-match presser, saying that he wanted to bring him on later on in the game so that he was fresher, but he was forced out of injuries, and McLean kind of almost getting a red card.
McLean was just trying to get himself sent off as early as possible, and so he had to bring Ikpeazu on before half-time. I don't think whatever Austin McPhee had done on Saturday, Hearts has won the game. I think Rangers were miles the better. I mean, I think a 3-0 result was a very good one for Hearts, given how the way the game went. It could easily have been 5 or 6. And yeah, there were, again, it's a flip side of what happened with Hibs, that Hibs were a bit more cavalier and conceded 5 goals. Hearts tried to defend, and even there couldn't defend properly, really. And we're easily beaten, and people are criticising them for not having more of a go. This is like much more of a test for Austin McPhee if he wants to put his name in the hat for the full-time managerial position. I don't think he will be considered. I know that and Budge has said that he's, you know, among the names that they'll look at, but given everything else that she has said about wanting an experienced coach, someone with quite high standing in the game, I don't think he's going to be there for the long term.
I think he's to make his mind up as well, isn't he? Because he's given himself a bit of a deadline, saying, I can't remember exactly how long he gave himself, but I think he said, the next 10 days I will know if I'm capable of taking this job. And he's trying to change things up a little bit, because he's taken his squad away from their usual training pitch at Orium, which is at Heriot Watt's campus, the university campus. And they've went north to St Andrews, Barnet Park, which is a juniors kind of pitch, to try and make it difficult and make it harder to train on, so that they can be ready at the weekend every game needs to be a win for them now.
It kind of makes sense to try and change things up, just if things are feeling a little bit stale and you need something to just kick start it. I don't know if McPhee would be a hugely popular choice with the Hearts support, though, because I think when we were speaking to Amoruso Lets It Run the other week in the podcast, he was saying that they see him very much as in that Levine mould. And I think it kind of showed at Hampden.
He suggested that he was really running the team anyway.
Yeah, I think so. So I think the Hearts fans, by and large, would prefer to see somebody completely different come in with a different set of ideas, and probably somebody with a bit more experience as well.
So Hearts have got the worst home record in the Premiership. The only team in the division yet to win at home this season. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and this is the type of game, I mean, we've said this for quite a few games, we've said it for Hamilton at home, Motherwell at home, you really need to start winning these types of games. We saw St Mirren, even when they went to Celtic Park last week, only being beaten 2-0 and really restricting Celtic much more than they have at home so far this season, that they're incredibly hard to break down. Yes, they don't score goals, which is their big problem, but that's the challenge they're going to pose to Hearts, and whether Hearts have got the guile to do that, whether they'll have the confidence to do that, because you have to take risks to break these kind of teams down. What happens if it gets to half time and it's still 0-0, and how the crowd reaction, and do they turn on the team and then the team get more nervous? So it is a huge game for Hearts. The thing is, if they do win and then appoint a new manager over the international break, it is a turning point potentially, but St Mirren will make it difficult for them. I still have my doubts about St Mirren in terms of, as I say, the number of goals they've scored, and as well organised as they have been with the players that they've got, they're not going to be able to maintain that defensive record throughout the course of the campaign. So once they start leaking a few, whether they'll have enough to get them out of relegation problems. And it's that constant balance they have to strike, that obviously they're not scoring goals because maybe they're not open enough, they're not taking enough risks, they're not playing enough men forward, and as soon as you start to do that, then you open up the other end. So it's a balancing act. They'll certainly give Hearts a game, and they won't roll over.
It finished 0-0 at St Mirren Park at the end of September, but St Mirren have lost all six of their away games in the Premiership this season. Do we think that run's going to end, or do we think that, you know, the change that Austin McPhee's trying to bring, it will be a Hearts win?
If Hearts can find or take even just like one chance, I don't see St Mirren, like you're saying, Kieran, having much there to get something else out of the game. They're not exactly, you know, sharpshooting. But
St Mirren have scored 5 goals the whole season so far, so it is awful. I think maybe for Hearts, you know, having Stephen Naismith back could be important. Of course it's important. He is their best player and they miss him.
If he manages to stay on his feet, that is.
And they've got Jamie Walker, who could be introduced as well. Obviously he's coming back from a leg break. I'm going to stump for Hearts. I think Hearts will get the win here. I think, like you were saying, Kieran, earlier on, I think St Mirren get players in the box. They just don't have the ability to put it in the back of the net, and that's why it will be a Hearts win. Time now for the latest odds with our man Lee Price at Paddy Power. Lee, give us a hand. Answer the two burning questions in Scottish football. First of all, who's going to be the next Hearts manager?
Yeah, I feel a little bit conflicted here, because the favourite to be the next Hearts manager is Stephen Robinson, aka Motherwell manager, aka the team with the sexiest kit in the league, sponsored, of course, by Paddy Power. Second favourite is Jack Ross, and then third in the betting, Roy Keane. Interesting, not sure where that's come from, but he's available.
Okay, then, who's going to be the next Hibs manager?
Far more confident here. It's 1-5, massively odds on, that Jack Ross goes to Hibs, not Hearts, as previously mentioned. Ex-London boss, sacked earlier this season, of course, very highly rated. Return to a big club like Hibs could be just what he needs. The rest of the betting is very distant then. So you've got Stephen Robinson again from Motherwell, 7-1, second favourite. And then you've got David Unsworth, Alan Stubbs, who's clearly up for it, judging by his recent quotes, and Owen Coyle, remember him? They're all 16-1 in the betting. We think it's going to Jack Ross.
Finally, it's the Dundee derby tonight. Last time they met, it finished 6-2 to United. What kind of game are we expecting here?
Tight. It might be the only time this season that Dundee United are not odds on for a game, which could spell value or could be a red flag. I'll let you work that one out. It's 11-8 the Tangerines win. They're the favourites here. Dundee, the home team, 13-8 with the draw, 23-10. Lawrence Shankland, always worth a mention, is odds on to score. And let's face it, he usually does.
It's not all doom and gloom in the capital. Edinburgh City are right in the race for promotion from League Two. Bob Fallon from the Citizen Supporters Club joins us now. First of all, Bob, I heard our producer Charlie spoke to you earlier on and pronounced your name a little bit differently.
He certainly did.
Was it Boab he called you?
It's Boab. I think most people like to think it's Holland.
Oh, it sounds good, but it's Bob, and I love it.
Yes.
Right, look, it's a terrible time for the two supposed giants of Edinburgh, but should everyone just start supporting City? Because it's going really well.
I'd be delighted if everybody started supporting Edinburgh City. we play a very decent brand of football. The gaffer has a very clear plan on how he wants to play, and I think the team are set up in that way, and he's signed players for that system and is working pretty well.
You were involved in a three-way battle for top spot last season, but then had a terrible end to the season, just 2 points in the last 15 available. What happened there? What lessons have been learned for this season?
I think in terms of last season, we had a very small squad and injuries eventually took their toll. It's a long season and I think we definitely played more games than anybody else in the league. The Challenge Cup run, well, nice, and well, we got a little European adventure to North Wales. It kind of scunnered the team a little bit, and some of the guys end up running on empty and injured for quite a lot of the season. So the difference from last season to this season is there's been a wee bit more investment to spread the squad a little better. So there's probably more cover in each position, and we're hoping that can carry us forward a bit better than last year.
You said that you play a good brand of football. Who are some of the top players that you like to see playing for City? The standout is Blair Henderson, who got you 30 goals from last season, but he's been injured and you've kind of got yourself into this good position so far without him. So who do you like seeing? Who are the big names?
Certainly this season, Danny Handling's been playing very well, and he's started to chip in with some goals, and probably for the first time in a long time, he's kept himself fit for quite a lot of the season. Alex Harris is playing pretty well. He's scored a lot of goals as well. In terms of the whole team itself, we're probably spreading the goals a bit better than we did last year, which is covering for the loss of Blair himself. I think sometimes it's hard to kind of pick a player for City because we have a lot of good players in different positions and a lot of unsung heroes. So the likes of Matt Laird does a lot of good work in the midfield, and you've got Robbie McIntyre on the left who does tremendous work down that side of the field as well, and our back four is generally really, really settled, which makes a big, massive difference to the team.
You've got Blair coming back as well. He was on the bench recently, wasn't he? So he'll be a huge boost for you.
Hopefully, yeah. So it really depends on how the gaffer wants to go with it. I mean, we're playing pretty well. We've only lost a couple of games. May have to force his way back into the team. I don't know how games will work that one. But certainly it's a big boost to have your 30-plus goal scorer coming back in to give a boost to the team.
What are the kind of aspirations for Edinburgh City going forward? Where do you guys see yourselves in 4 or 5 seasons' time?
If you ask the board, I think they've made proclamations of they want to be the best part-time team in Scotland. I think as fans, we possibly have to temper that a little bit. There's some very good teams above us, and there's some very good teams also who put in a lot more money than we could ever probably put in. This all may change because we've recently just been taken over, so that these kind of plans may come to fruition. But certainly if we can hold ourselves in the league, possibly into promotion in League One, runs in the cup, that type of thing, then I think most of the fans will be pretty happy with that.
Before we move on, we should send our best wishes to Jim Weir. We spoke to him on this podcast back in August, and he was involved in a pretty horrific car accident in September. Weir has since had to resign as former manager to take some time off to recover from those injuries and to concentrate on his everyday work commitments. So, Jim, all the best to you, and I hope you get better soon. Back to the Premiership, where the Staggies face the Dons at Dingwall, Finn.
Yes, they do.
Aberdeen took Kilmarnock apart 3-0 last Saturday, but it was a makeshift Kilmarnock defence, we should say, because JJ is not here. it's going to be interesting for third place this season.
Yeah, I think particularly that game last weekend, I know you're saying like Kamarok didn't have the same defensive setup that they've had for the past couple of months when they've been very solid. But Aberdeen are starting, I think, to show some signs of, in these games, I know they've been heavily beaten by Celtic and Rangers in the past few weeks, but in these games against the likes of Kilmarnock, going away to Motherwell a couple of weeks ago and winning 3-0 as well, that maybe over the course of the season they're going to still be the third best team. The big thing that they have that a lot of the other teams in the division outside the top two don't have is a goal scorer.
Yeah.
I mean, Cosgrove scored again against Kilmarnock. So,
and hit the post.
Yeah. I mean, I know he came off with a slight injury, so that's a concern. It might be a problem for this weekend. It shouldn't be a long-term one. So even if he does miss this weekend, he'll be back after the international break.
But then they've still got the big fridge up front. Curtis Main's goal was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it was via a lovely pass from Ferguson.
What a ball in that was.
It was actually a really well-worked goal.
Yeah.
Right from the back. But I do think as much as I know a lot of Aberdeen fans were, you know, glowing praise of it, it should have been defended better. But hey-ho, they had Gary Dicker at centre-back, who's done it before, and then Wilson as well, who was probably one of Queen of the South's best players last season. But he's not a defender, he's a midfielder. What about Ross County then? Unbeaten in 4 away games. The last two have finished 2-2.
But without a win in the last 6 games, in the Premiership games at least. I think, yeah, Ross County did get off to a very good start. You quite often see teams that come up with a championship and you'll build on that momentum. I do think they'll probably have enough to keep them up. Just if we talk by comparison of their last two games finishing 2-2, we've just been talking about how St Mirren, for example, struggled to score goals. They'll have to be wary because we would expect eventually that the two Edinburgh clubs will sort of move away from the bottom of the table. So Ross County being in sixth at the moment, whether they maintain that over the course of the season, I think they'll obviously struggle to get into the top six, but they're more than capable on their day of springing a surprise.
It does show a strong mentality within the group, though, doesn't it? The fact that I think they came from 2-0 down at Hibernian to finish 2-2.
Yep.
And then again, they were down to Hamilton to come back and get a point away from home.
Yeah, exactly. And they did it the same. I know Motherwell got a man sent off that day, but the same at Motherwell earlier in the season, they were 1-0 down and came back to win 2-1. So yeah, I mean, I think that has been shown sometimes this season they're heavily beaten by Rangers, Celtic, even they get home to Livingston, which is a bit of a surprise. They will have their days where they take a bit of a thrashing, but I think particularly at home they'll get enough wins, and I think that this is the type of game that will get a good sense as well, I think, of where Aberdeen are at, because after the results they got at Hamilton against Motherwell and Kilmarnock, if they go and win here again, they really are starting to establish themselves as the third force again. But Ross County are perfectly capable of springing a surprise.
I think it is always a difficult place as well to go, Dingwall. Yeah. Not as evident by some of the results this season, like you were saying, Kieran, like the 4-0 game. But I don't think it's the easiest game for Aberdeen to go there. It's tricky. And the weird thing about Aberdeen is that like they have pulled out pretty convincing victories against the likes of Motherwell and Kilmarnock this season, but then they've had injuries, granted. But then it's the games where you think, no, Aberdeen should win that, and then they don't, especially on the road or even at home. So this could be one of those games potentially.
I know that the three Kilmarnock goals, for example, came from cross balls. It is what you're saying, it's the games where teams sit in against them that they quite often struggle to break teams down. And yeah, it would be interesting to see, because Ross County don't often play like that. You know, they are quite progressive in the way they play, so whether they change tack to try and foil Aberdeen or they sort of play the natural game, which might actually play into Aberdeen's hands.
Just finally now, we'll talk about Kilmarnock versus Hamilton. We mentioned Kilmarnock's injury problems. Stuart Finlay is out for 3 months with a hamstring tear, which is a huge blow. It wasn't long ago he's, you know, turning out for Scotland. But Alex Bruce will be back from suspension. This is after his appeal for his red card against Motherwell was rejected and he missed the Aberdeen game. So do we think Gary Dicker will continue at centre-half?
Yeah, you might have to. I mean, losing Stuart Finlay is an absolutely massive blow. He's just been such a rock for them over the past two seasons. And like you're saying as well, his recent turnout for Scotland and the goal that he scored.
Yeah.
So I just love seeing that celebration, the photo of that. Just that's, you know, the embodiment of every single Tartan Army fan in that photograph. Yeah, he'll be a huge loss to them. I think Kilmarnock will win this. I just,
Hamilton have that thing where they, like I say it every week.
Been
like
so unlucky recently, Hamilton.
Yeah.
And Brian Rice was angry that they didn't win against Ross County last time round. So
I think not seeing it out, and especially the manner of the goal they conceded late on against Ross County, it was a shame. They definitely have players capable of making an impact. I've been really impressed with Lewis Smith this season. I think he's been great. Obviously, he scored quite a few important goals, but it's the way that he's got that brilliant thing where it's a young player and they're kind of fearless, so they just get their head down and run, and the way that he creates chances is a real bonus for Hamilton. But I
assist as well for Oakley, didn't he?
He did, yeah, which was a brilliantly taken goal by Oakley, actually. Yeah. I thought a really great finish, but I still think Killie at home, last week's result was a bit of an aberration away at Aberdeen. I think they'll just be too strong for Hamilton.
We should credit Angelo Alessio again. I know they lost against Aberdeen, but manager of the month, it's turning out to be not a bad season.
Yeah, manager of the month for October, which guarantees a terrible November. These type of things work, isn't it?
Yeah, not a great start to November, but 5 games without a win for Hamilton, and they just don't have the game management, that game kind of nous to see games out.
One of the great things about Hamilton is, like Vin was talking about there with Lewis Smith, like they always give an opportunity to younger players, and when if you do have younger players, then you're going to have a bit of that sort of inexperience, stuff like that. But they do have like plenty of seasoned campaigners that have been there over the course of quite a few seasons, and they do have that, we come back to it all the time, that know-how of how to stay in this league. So they're still in a decent position. They're in 8th, still only 2 points off the bottom. It's all very tight there, and you would expect it'll be between them, St Mirren, maybe at some point Livingston and Ross County coming more towards the pack now that St Johnstone have picked up. But given Kilmarnock's defensive woes, if Hamilton can go there and score, I mean, Kilmarnock, even in their good run, have hardly been free scoring, so there is a chance for them there to go and pick up something.
That's all we've got time for. Thank you, Kieran. Thank you, Finn. Thank you, producer Charlie Boab. Thanks to the Little Kicks for our little theme song. And thanks to you for listening. We'll be back next Friday as we look ahead to Scotland's doubleheader with Cyprus and Kazakhstan.
Yes.
Find us a team, Steve Clark, please.
You've been listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter. And make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.